Chawana Macy, who is a leader in environmental awareness education, is a practicing Buddhist who learned from Tibetan Buddhists and from Western teachers. She has a deep meditation practice that she has cultivated since she first worked with the Tibetan refugees in 1965. It has clearly given her amazing compassion and a profound capacity to be present. Present to other people's difficulties, to the earth's difficulties, to her own pain. And she also has the quality that is common in people who have settled deeply into their own souls. She can laugh and be playful at times when the rest of us are busy being careful, which means that she invites us into connection and hopefulness at all kinds of unexpected moments. You might recall her guidelines for the work that we shared earlier in the fall. And those guidelines were: come from gratitude. She's very consistent about that. Don't be afraid of the dark. Dare to envision. Rediscover your solidarity and act your age. And of course, the last one is meant to be read with a twinkle in one's eye, because everyone always says act your age, and they're, when they say it, usually they're sort of scolding you and telling you to behave properly. But Chawana Macy is saying act your age because all of us are as old as the universe itself. We all have the elements that were part of the Big Bang. We all have hydrogen that was there from the very beginning. So you can act, well, probably any darn way you want. If you're that old, you have the authority to do what you think is right in the moment. And that's exactly what she's hoping for us to do, to speak up and act up in the ways that we think are most important and not worry quite so much about being careful. Chawana Macy has learned these principles from her Buddhist practice, but also from her encounters with people of this planet who she has met in all of her learnings and teachings around the planet. And she has found that there are some life-giving and life-saving practices that keep showing up everywhere. In some of her travels, she came home to where she started from in New York State and learned one of these important things. She tells the story of growing up in New York State and not learning a thing about the native people who lived there before she did. And this is the story that most white people have. We grow up on lands that used to be lived on and treasured by native people, but mostly we don't learn that history. She, like most white people, learned the European history. And then she went off to Tibet, and she went off to all corners of the world, but eventually, 25 years later, came back to graduate school in almost the same part of the world. And then she learned about the Onondaga people, who had been the hearth keepers for thousands of people who used to live from Pennsylvania through New York and into Canada. We know those people by many names, including the Iroquois. And if you know your U.S. history, you may remember that the Iroquois contributed something important to the United States Constitution, because it was the Iroquois people who had their own peaceful democratic society in New York State and some of the surrounding land. And they had kept that for 1,000 years before the Europeans arrived. And then we learned from their wisdom. Chawana Macy tells the story of coming to understand that she grew up just miles from this ancient community with its social, spiritual, and ecological wisdom. But she had to travel a long way to come back to find it. She learned that the Onondaga people of New York were one of 6 Native nations who for many, many years had been constantly at war a story that we know about our nation. But about 1,000 years ago, a peacekeeper came to them. The story goes that someone came across the lake in a stone canoe and taught them the possibilities of peace. I don't know if they're embracing the contradictoriness of that, the possibility of floating in a stone canoe. That's what it takes to have peace in the world. But somehow, with the arrival of that being, they gave up their wars and wrote a treaty of peace among their people. And it stood for 1,000 years. And then the colonists moved into New York and they took the land from these people. And the 6 different tribes were forced onto small reservations. And that story, we know, we put it out of our minds all the time. And over the years, those Native American tribes have tried various things to repossess themselves, including suing the United States or their local state government for compensation for those invasions. And of course, some of them have won the right to have casinos and make money. Some have gotten some land or some other kinds of compensation. But the Onondaga people didn't sue the United States. They just kept talking over what would be the most beneficial for their people and for their earth. They seemed to want to have a different approach. And in 2005, the Onondaga people brought a suit against the state of New York for taking its land illegally. But the suit didn't ask that the land be returned to them or that they receive any compensation for the land. What they asked was that the state of New York clean up the land that was now in their care, that they clean up the water that they had not been treating as a precious commodity. Well, they wouldn't say commodity, as a precious living being. The Onondaga people sued on behalf of, as they said, the four-legged and the winged. They said, "We seek justice not for ourselves, but justice for the whole of creation." Needless to say, that suit, that particular suit, had not been brought into the U.S. court system before, suing on behalf of the whole of creation. And the court declined to hear the case, saying, interestingly, that it would be too disruptive. Isn't that interesting? Which, of course, sort of proves the legitimacy of the case. But and it came around a few times. It went through the court system in a number of steps, of course, but ultimately the federal system refused to hear the case. And so the Onondaga people have taken the case outside of the U.S. legal system and have made a petition to the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights. This is part of a larger body who tries to make sure that things in the Americas are as they should be. So this case has now gone to an entity that is larger than the United States. And the Onondaga people are asking for remedy for the taking of their land and the treaty violations, which are human rights violations under the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And it turns out several other international agreements. So we'll wait to hear what these international bodies think about the Onondaga people suing on behalf of the whole creation. It seems weird to be suing for things like this, but Joanna Macy could tell that they were up to something a little different and was curious about how they got there. So she went out to meet them. Drove probably just a few miles from where she grew up to find this new world. And the woman who greeted her showed her around their new community center, which they had built with very sparse funding, and a new school for those who did not wish to go to a different country, the United States, to attend school. And they had a beautiful inlaid turtle on the floor of their new school, the turtle of Turtle Island, which is the creation story of the Onondaga people and many of the people who lived in the Northeast. They say that a woman fell from the sky, and in order to create the land that we walk around on, they piled up mud from the bottom of the ocean on the back of a turtle. So we're being carried all the time by a living being. Joanna learned that these Iroquois people and all of the people in their Six Nation collective have two important principles that they use for decisions and taking action. One is to think about the impact of each decision on the next seven generations of people. And we've heard that principle before. But what would it be like to actually sit and think about what our choices would do to the next seven generations of people? And the other principle they have is to always practice gratitude. It's just part of how they live in the world. Part, I think, of this peace treaty that they made for themselves. They have a long ritual for a gratitude practice. There's an hour and a half gratitude prayer. But they weave it into their lives in little bits all the time. They perhaps try to get up and see the sunrise each morning and notice that it's a different one each day. Joanna Macy speculates that this is part of what gives them the resilience and the inventiveness, despite having come through horrible losses and ongoing inequity. So I have been looking also for practices that are embedded in our own culture, ways to practice gratitude continuously. And I came across a piece of writing by a woman who wrote a book called Carry On, Warrior: The Power of Embracing Your Messy, Beautiful Life. And she has a blog, of course. And in one of her recent entries entitled Give Me Gratitude or Give Me Debt, she wrote a piece about her 15-second kitchen makeover, which was inspired by the fact that on her blog she had posted a picture of herself in her kitchen. She's happened to be in her kitchen, but I guess a number of people responded to that by saying, oh, what interesting you posted, and, you know, your kitchen would look really great if you just updated it a little bit. And apparently they sent her advice about how to do that. And apparently some people had maybe had done some schematic drawings about what her kitchen could look like. And apparently for the rest of that day, she began to think, well, maybe I do need to update my kitchen. It is looking a little shabby, isn't it? But she said she lay down to sleep that night and remembered a passage from Thoreau's Walden. Thoreau said, I say beware of all enterprises that require new clothes and not a new wearer of the clothes. So the next morning she got up and, as she said, she put on her fresh perspectacles. I think that will be a trending word this year, 2015. And she went down to her kitchen and did her 15-second kitchen makeover. She took a picture of her refrigerator and posted, I have a refrigerator. This thing makes food magically cold. I'm pretty sure in the olden days, frontiers women had to drink warm Diet Coke. Thank you, refrigerator. And then she opened the refrigerator up and took a picture and said, look, it's full of food. Many parents would give anything to be able to feed their children like I can. Almost 16,000 mama's babies die every day from malnutrition. But not mine. When this food runs out, I'll jump in my car and go get some more. It's ludicrous, really. It's like my family wins the lottery every morning. Then she took a picture of the faucet in her kitchen sink. And in the picture, there are dirty dishes kind of piled up behind the faucet, which I thought was just right. She says, I pull this lever and clean water pours out every time, day or night. 780 million people worldwide, can't even comprehend that number, lack access to clean water. Mamas everywhere spend their entire day walking miles to and from wells for a single bucket of this. And I have it right here at my fingertips. I'm almost embarrassed to say that we have another one of these in each of our bathrooms. And one in the front yard with which to wash our feet. We use clean drinking water to wash our feet. What bounty! She goes through the rest of her kitchen and then ends this blog post with a before and after picture. The before is just the kitchen. And the after picture is her three children and her husband all in the frame, all with big grins or sticking out their tongues and crossing their eyes, joyful, silly, filling up the room. Filling it up with gratitude. I don't think that a gratitude practice should ever be a mask for accepting things that aren't good or for covering up pain that's real. And there is so much we can be grateful for. There is so much grounding for our lives when we turn our attention, when we train our minds to notice what we do have to be grateful for. There's a lot of new neurological study out now that tells us that our minds are kind of wired to go, well, toward remodeling your life all the time, toward what isn't right. And you can look at, for instance, what's happened on this continent to the Native American people and be dissatisfied. And our minds can be trained to notice what there is to be grateful for, that we have new understandings of our culture and Native cultures, that we are people who can have new relationships in the world, that we have a lot, and that we have each other.